Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus.
Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be.
Sad song and make it better. Remember to
in life unkind.
Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on you when you change with every new day? Still, I'm gonna miss you.
Stoked by a rabid tabloid press and international interest, the likes of which hasn't been seen in pop music since, the Beatles-Rolling Stones rivalry was considered overblown, even by members of each band. But below the surface, there was plenty of tension and competition, often good-natured but sometimes nasty, especially as the 1960s came to a close. The Stones and Beatles shared plenty, a small social circle, management, bemusement about the mania that surrounded them both. But they differed on plenty, including politics, musical style, and originality. Societally, for many people, band preference meant everything. John McMillan teaches in the history department at Georgia State University and is the author of the new book, Beatles vs. Stones, published by Simon & Schuster. John McMillan, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much, Ian, for having me. It's my pleasure.
So in some ways, this is kind of a false dichotomy, but you write early on that this is not a book about necessarily your preference. So I wonder what brought you to this topic in the first place.
Well, a couple different things. I mean, the truth is I have been a lifelong Beatles fan. I mean, even from the time when I was just a little kid, I discovered Beatles records in my parents' collection, and I really identified with the Beatles, you know, growing up. And then later on, I became a huge Stones fan. So it's an appealing project for me. But the real impetus is it grew out of a book I wrote a few years ago. In 2011, I published a book called Smoking Typewriters. And that book was on the New Left and countercultural press in the late 60s and early 70s. And I'm not sure if a lot of your listeners are aware, but, you know, in the late 60s, just about every campus and community had a radical newspaper. And some of them were very political oriented, and some were kind of, you know, hippie-ish and groovy. And so that was the topic of my book. And when I was researching that book, I came across a very interesting debate about the supposed different political stylings of the Beatles and the Stones, circa about 1968. And so there was just really neat source material that no one had ever brought to light in any other writings on the Beatles and the Stones. So I wrote an article, and then people liked the article, and I guess that led to the idea to write the book.
Let's stick with the politics for a minute, because as you write, the Beatles were sort of afraid of being too political. And even though many on the left and in the alternative press felt that the Beatles were on their side, they faced a lot of criticism for not being more outwardly supportive of certain causes. And the Rolling Stones, on the other hand, while they got a lot of headlines for the drug bust that kind of led to Keith and Mick becoming spokesmen for a generation, maybe in a way that they wouldn't have without that arrest, you write that when there was a big protest in England, Mick Jagger kind of showed up because it was the thing to do that week. So maybe you can just trace the politics of each band and the way they expressed that for us.
You know, the Beatles, when Brian Epstein was their manager, were always instructed not to get involved in a lot of political controversy. And for the most part, they tried to do that. It became clear that the Beatles opposed the Vietnam War, but they never crusaded against it or made any, you know, statements about the war or got involved in any kind of activism, for instance. And the Beatles were opposed to segregation. So they would have been on the good side of the civil rights movement, but they never you know, use their power and influence to make any public statements that, you know, might have been, you know, useful to these left-wing causes. The Beatles also, in the mid to late 60s, were very much associated with the kind of aesthetic radicalism of the counterculture, the hippies, you know. And the Stones in the late 60s became associated with the more militant street fighting ethic, you know, the politics of confrontation. And so the really diehard political people tend to like the Stones more than the Beatles, although the Stones also were not really involved in any activist causes. And so it's interesting, you know, back then young people were so convinced that, you know, what the Beatles and the Stones thought about these issues was very important, and they wanted to take their style cues from the Beatles and the Stones. But, you know, the Beatles and the Stones were young men in the 60s. Some of the members of both bands were very smart, but they weren't particularly well educated, and they just did not get involved in any real political causes.
Let's go over to the music. One of the lasting criticisms in the book is from John Lennon, who complained that the Stones followed the Beatles pretty much in style and form, just a few months behind, especially toward the end of the Beatles. Did you find that was true?
I think it's true for a particular period, yeah, in the early 60s. You know, the Beatles in their second album, they had a very unusual cover. It was a black and white cover, and the Beatles, though they had this reputation for being kind of cuddly and lovable and mop tops, they were kind of staring impassively into the camera in this moody black and white album photo. And then the Stones album came out, and it had the same type of photo. And, of course, the Beatles had that big hit with Yesterday, Paul McCartney's song. And that was an unusual song because it was just Paul strumming a guitar with a little string arrangement behind it. But none of the other Beatles played on that song Yesterday. And shortly after that, the Stones had a song, As Tears Go By, which similarly had Mick, you know, singing with a guitar accompaniment and some strings, but no one else from the band. I think the most egregious one that people always talk about is, you know, the Sgt. Pepper album that the Beatles put out in 1967 was the most talked about album in history. I don't know if it was the best record they ever made, but it was a huge success. And so then the next Stones record was Her Satanic Majesty's Request, which is an attempt for the Stones to do a kind of psychedelic album. And most people thought it was, first of all, a poor record, and that they were kind of fecklessly glomming on to the Beatles. I mean, the Stones are musically very audacious in many respects, but they're not very convincing as a psychedelic band, you know. So it seemed like they were trying to glom on to a trend that the Beatles had set. And of all the Beatles, John Lennon is the one who seemed to be most rankled by this.
The Beatles and the Stones often talked about not wanting to be in direct competition with each other, and so the theory was that they would time their releases so that they wouldn't both have a new record or single out at the same time. So how much collusion was there between the groups in practice?
Right. Well, you know, that theory was widely believed by a lot of people, including me, because Keith Richards and Paul McCartney and other members of both bands have gone on record as saying that, yeah, they would make sure that they didn't release albums or 45s too close to each other because they didn't want to cut into each other's market too much. But after the book was finished, I actually found many cases where Beatles and Stones songs or albums came out in pretty close proximity to each other. So I think that story may be a little bit overblown in the public's imagination.
The Beatles were always quick to point out that they vastly outsold the Stones, despite the Stones' own successes. So when you're comparing these two groups, for you yourself as the author, how do you stack them up next to each other, side by side?
Well, you know, what I don't do is what some other writers and rock critics have done, which is, you know, look at particular categories and try to weigh in on, you know, who had the better drummer or, you know, what or whatever else. This is more of a joint biography. And the idea is to describe how the, you know, rivalry, quote unquote, between the Beatles and the Stones was constructed by fans and by people in the media and to some degree, you know, by the groups themselves. They certainly have lots of obvious commonalities. They're all about the same age. They, you know, coming out of England at the same time. They all loved American music, mostly music from African Americans. And yet at the same time, they had, you know, there's differences to their personalities and standpoints and whatnot that really make comparison between the two bands irresistible.
Tell us about the ties in management that bound the groups together, especially in the latter half of the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll answer the question about the latter half, but although it's interesting, in the very early 60s, Brian Epstein, of course, is managing the Beatles, and he had hired for a short time as an assistant a guy named Andrew Luke Oldham, who discovered the Stones. And Andrew Oldham actually offered Brian Epstein the chance to be co-manager or have some managerial interest in running the Stones, and Epstein passed. And that would have been very interesting if that had happened, in terms of how the quote-unquote rivalry was, constructed. The Beatles and the Stones also shared the same manager for a few years in the late 60s and early 70s by the name of Alan Klein. And he's an American accountant, and he was known to be, a genius in terms of his ability to, read contracts and count money and everything else. He was very successful, but he was also a thief. And so he is very egregiously, scammed the Rolling Stones. And he caused a lot of dissension within the ranks of the Beatles, because John and George and Ringo all wanted to work with Alan Klein as a manager, and Paul McCartney did not. And that was a big split between them that they can never reconcile.
The state of the bands today is quite different. Obviously, the Beatles haven't played a concert in 47 years and broke up officially in 1970, even though Paul and Ringo are still out on the road. The Rolling Stones, on the other hand, were playing a series of 50th anniversary concerts just last year and have never stopped over this time. So where do you see the state of this rivalry, as it were, today?
Well, the Stones have never stopped, it's true, but they've definitely slowed down. They've only written two completely new songs since 2005. And the Beatles broke up in 1970, of course, and they never made another record again. They never shared a stage again. And I think in some ways that enhances their mystique for a lot of people. They didn't go on to become a baby boomer act playing the same hits for, they didn't do these nostalgia tours. They didn't really cash in, quote unquote, on their legacy as much as some other bands might have. And whereas with the Stones, they're less active in making music, but they certainly, they still do these giant, gargantuan tours that get a lot of media attention. But when they play live, they mostly play almost all the songs that were popular many, many years ago. And in fact, on the last tour, there were many nights where the whole set list did not contain a single song that was written after 1981. And I think in some ways that diminishes from their legacy to some degree. The fact that they're not really out there pushing new material, that bugs me a little bit.
Well, we've been speaking with John McMillan. He's the author of Beatles versus Stones. It's a new book out from Simon & Schuster, and he teaches in the history department at Georgia State University. John, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you this morning. I just want to add that when people ask this question and I have a chance to answer Beatles versus Stones, I always say The Who. So if there's room for a sequel out there, I will be reading it.
I was on a radio show the other night, and someone called to make particularly that point. So actually, I like the Kinks better than The Who, but I agree that those are the best bands, the Beatles and the Stones and The Who and the Kinks. It was a great run of music in that period.
Sure was. Well, that's John McMillan, author of Beatles versus Stones, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.